Good afternoon. I'm Jasmine, and I'm excited to be here. I, along with my co-authors, Bradley Reeves, Amani Sherman, Patrick Trainer, and Kevin Butler, are excited to talk to you about our research, Regulators Mount Up, an analysis of privacy policies for mobile money services. Now, mobile money systems are used across the world by billions of people. They're tools for development, for economic growth. One of the key features is financial inclusion, for they help people in developing countries out of poverty by filling the gap, by forming an alternate financial ecosystem. Now, you may ask, what exactly is mobile money? Well, they're services that provide the ability to store value and make payments through mobile phones. Then you may ask, who exactly is the target audience? Well, typically, the target audiences are those who are unbanked customers or who don't have access to traditional financial institutions. One of the key features about mobile money systems is that they not only are accessible on smart devices, but also on feature phones, mobile phones that lack the advanced functionality of the smartphones. Now, let's talk about what mobile money is not. Mobile money is not a simple mobile payment system like PayPal or Venmo, and it's not a traditional financial institution. One of the key differences between mobile payment systems and mobile money systems are the fact that the mobile payment systems like PayPal and Venmo heavily rely on traditional banking systems, including relying on credit cards and bank accounts. Mobile money systems are typically developed by telecommunication companies, not typically built by banks. Now, our previous work, Mobile Money, Mobile Problems, was an analysis of branchless banking applications, or mobile money systems, where we assessed the registration, login, and transaction processes and found significant vulnerabilities, including weak encryption. So our results encouraged us to measure and evaluate the privacy policies of these systems. And this work was featured in the Wall Street Journal in 2015. Now, we collected a list of 54 mobile money systems from 32 countries highlighted in this map. The majority of those countries were actually developing areas. Now, we wanted to measure what exactly they were doing to preserve that privacy. So to answer this question, we performed an in-depth analysis of their privacy policies. Now, we collected a system from at least one of these countries, but from some of the countries, we collected several systems, including 12 from Nigeria, 4 from India, and 3 from South Africa. Now, we collected this list of mobile money systems from the website of the GSMA, which is an industry group that is in support of mobile money services. So we assume that if the mobile money services were provided on this website, that they would typically abide by their principles. So we started off with their mobile privacy principles. But as you can see here, it's only one page. So we didn't feel that these principles fully encompassed everything that should be included in a privacy policy. So we supplemented those principles with the FDIC principles, or the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which was designed to protect the financial security of bank deposits, but it also expands its role in protecting consumers, particularly in consumer privacy. So we took a look at their privacy rule handbook, which was a bit more in-depth, with 6 pages long. Now, neither the FDIC nor the GSMA principles independently covered every principle that we felt was critical for privacy policies. So we collected, we analyzed both sets, and we came up with a list of 11 principles based on both. Now, the FDIC and the GSMA did have several principles in common, including user choice and control, including security information, and sharing process of data. Now, the FDIC had its own set of unique principles, including collection process of data, definitions of terms included in the privacy policy, examples of data that is actually being used and shared, and third parties and how they're interacting with the data. Now, the GSMA also had its own set of particular principles, including the purpose of data collection, children and adolescents and their privacy, and the accountability and enforcement of those employees who will be interacting with this data. Now, our classification process was very rigorous and very particular. We manually read and coded each privacy policy, and we gave each policy the benefit of the doubt in order for our analysis to be repeatable and as conservative as possible. We performed a keyword analysis to get a baseline of which principles were covered before we do a deeper analysis in future work. Now, our methodology is divided into 4 key pillars and answers critical questions. Pillar 1, availability and freshness. Does a privacy policy exist? When was it last updated? Pillar 2, policy content. What does the policy cover? So in terms of pillar 1 and 2, We determined if policy existed and if the policy had been updated and if that date was actually posted. And then we assessed each policy based on those 11 principles mentioned before. Pillar 3, readability. What is the policy's reading grade level and word count? Pillar 4, language. Are policies available in the local dominant languages? Now for Pillar 3 and 4, we determine the reading grade level of each document. For the higher the reading grade level of a document, the harder it is to read. In addition, we wanted to know if those policies were actually written in languages that the users could actually read, because if the languages were written in a not predominant language, it would pretty much be ineffective for those users. Now, in addition to those mobile money systems that we focused on, we also assessed the top 50 U.S. banks in order to have a control group or a metric to show the impact of legal regulations, because as stated before, the U.S. banks are regulated by the FDIC. So now that we've established how we're going to analyze those policies, let's talk about the results. Pillar 1, availability and freshness. Only 30 of those 54 mobile money systems assessed had a privacy policy at all. That means almost half of these systems didn't even have a privacy policy. This is critical because if privacy policies aren't available, how in the world would users be able to understand how their data is being used and shared and be able to make decisions about their privacy? In addition, only 5 of those 30 policies have been updated within the past year. Now, just because we found 30 privacy policies, that doesn't quite mean that they were actually thorough or helpful at all. For example, EcoCash. 68 words, which you could probably read in 30 seconds. We found that although it did have the word security, so it did receive 1 point because our analysis was a keyword analysis, it did not disclose any pertinent information. So just because in general that the privacy policies were available, it didn't quite mean that they were good. But we are happy to report that post our analysis, they have improved their privacy policy. Now in comparison, all 50 US banks did have a privacy policy. However, only 30 of those privacy policies have been updated within the past year. Now you may wonder why we focus so much on freshness. Well, if companies are constantly updating their data management practices, users should be informed of these changes. In addition, it is critical that companies demonstrate that they are concerned about their user privacy. So let's talk about Pillar 2, policy content. Now, before we go into this discussion about this graph, I wanted to point out a few things. So this graph is a representation of 54 mobile money systems and 50 U.S. banks. Now, as stated earlier, only 30 of those 54 mobile money systems actually had a policy. So for those other systems that did not have a policy, they received a score of 0. So you will see a reflection of that in this graph. So the first section we'll talk about are the principles that were found both in the GSMA and the FDIC. As you can see, the U.S. banks performed significantly well, whereas the mobile money systems did not. FDIC. Now, these principles, we understand that were only covered in the FDIC, so we don't expect the mobile money systems to adhere to these principles, but recommend these for good practice because it's important for the users to be able to understand the terms that are in the policy and be able to understand which types of data are being used as far as examples. Now, GSMA results. Due to the fact that these mobile money systems were provided by the GSMA, we assumed that they were adhering to their privacy principles. Now, it's pretty alarming to see that the privacy policies that did exist, they didn't perform so well in this area. And these are critical topics that need to be covered because users need to know who will be held accountable and how they'll be held accountable if they misuse their user data. Overall, consumers are not being informed across the industry of critical things that need to be included in their privacy policy. Now let's talk about Pillar 3, readability. Now the average reading grade level of the mobile money privacy policies was 12.1 in comparison to the U.S. banks, which was 10.8. Now, the higher our reading grade level, the more difficult the text is. So based on our results, the mobile money privacy policies were significantly harder to read than the U.S. bank privacy policies. Now, this can be a concern because in the developing countries, the literacy rates vary. So it's critical that these users are able to read these policies in a conducive manner. Now, in addition to reading grade level, we calculated the word count of these policies, and they ranged between 68 words to over 4,000 words. And we found in general that the majority of these policies were around the size of MobiCash. So not only were they harder to read, but they were longer, but covered less content, as you could see in our results. Now, pillar four, language. In pillar three, we assumed that these policies were written in languages that were of the predominant languages of these countries. However, we did a further analysis of these languages and these policies, and we found that of the 54 mobile money systems that we assessed, only 30 had policies. Only 20 were written in the first and or second most predominant language of that country. Only 16 were written in the most predominant language, and only 6 were written in the second most predominant language. This is critical because if users are unable to read the policy, it's not effective. Now, let's back up a little bit. Our title was Regulators Mount Up. One of the key takeaways and discussions that we talk about heavily in our paper is the need for industry and government regulators to ensure policies are comprehensive. Now, we know there are several models that could be used, whether industry or government, and we don't take a strong position on either, but something has to be done. Mobile money systems are changing lives around the world and should be improved to protect consumers. As I said before, we discussed this heavily in the paper. Now, in summary, just to cover some of the key results, 45% of those mobile money systems did not have a privacy policy. Now, if they don't have privacy policies, how exactly will those users be able to understand how their data is being used and how they can protect themselves? Now, of those policies that we did find, they need much improvement, including the content, the availability and freshness, and the readability. In addition, the policies simply need to be written in languages that the users can read. So I would like to thank you for your time, and now I would like to open the floor for questions.
That was a well-presented and a really useful talk. Thank you very much for covering this topic and bringing this to us. I am wondering whether you have cross-checked this, given particularly that many of these systems are run by telcos in these countries. Have you cross-checked this by any chance against the work being done by, oh my goodness, I'm blanking on everybody's name, Rebecca McKinnon at New America Foundation on privacy policy of telcos themselves, particularly around the world?
No, but I would definitely like to get more information about that.
Cool.
After the talk. I'll
Sounds
come
good.
Find you. Yes. Thank you.
Hi. Great talk.
Thank you.
I was wondering, after you had these findings, whether you still think text-based privacy policies are the right way to go, or if we should be trying to use like graphics or videos or something totally different.
Well, there's so much research about privacy policies, and I mean, it's kind of like an ongoing thing, whether it should be like an infographic or text. But I think one of the key things that we found is that it just needs to cover whatever the information is, whether it's a graph or, you know, images or video. It needs to cover key points and break it down in a way that is understandable and, you know, readable, so that users can understand, whether it's an infographic or, you know, I think there are several options, but as long as it covers the key content, I think that's what's most important. So
thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for the chat. Cool methods, cool stuff. I was wondering if you noticed whether there were sort of big blocks of similarity between the privacy policies that you looked at. Because a lot of the talks today, I'm getting this feeling that you could explain a lot of it by, hey, people are copying and pasting some security code, some password construction policy, some privacy policy they found. I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about whether you saw some of that in your data.
Well, I can say that the policies were written probably by a lawyer, and most of them were written by similar lawyers, because we did find similar content. So, and as the results showed, the readability was really high. So you could tell that the same people were writing these policies, and they weren't really considering, you know, how they were writing them. So you could definitely see the type of person that was actually writing it. It was very high level, very high level term. So
I mean, did you see a lot of sort of almost straight text overlap, or was it just like similar style?
It was more similar style, not necessarily copy and paste. So, yeah.
Hello. My question is related mainly to how many people actually read these policies, given that also these policies are written for basic phones, usually flip phones and so on. So do you think that this attributed to why they didn't pay much attention to creating these policies, and because probably people don't read them?
That's a great question. So your question was, actually, could you repeat your question?
So my question is related to the population. My question is related to the population actually using this kind of technology.
Okay.
So all of them, they are not going to read these policies on their phones. That's one, right? So because they are very simple phones and so on. Plus, probably the providers in a lot of these regimes are probably authoritarian regimes, so the people don't have... for example, we use the same technology in Egypt. You know, I'm originally from Egypt. And I can easily ride a taxi and text the money to the taxi driver, right, or wire the money to the taxi driver. So I don't think even maybe because of the nature of the atmosphere where this technology is being used, maybe the telecom or the service providers are not actually paying much attention to creating these policies.
That's actually the problem right there. You answered your own question. They're not focusing. That's the thing we really want to focus on, is that these companies take a more active interest in making sure these privacies are available and up to date. Even though everyone may not read it, we always read the manual when something breaks. So when something goes wrong, that's typically when we would read a privacy policy, or when there's an announcement that, you know, your data has been breached. So it's not necessarily that we expect these policies to be read every day, but we expect them to be available at all times, especially when something goes wrong. So